This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89, it's 8:45 in the morning. You're with Julian and Chuang, and we're talking about the day's biggest business news. Now, the Nikkei Malaysia Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, that's quite a mouthful, but otherwise known as the PMI, has dropped to a 6.5-year low to 46.8 from 48.2 in November. Anything below 50 represents a slowdown in Malaysia.
Now, of course, this number is very, very important from an economic forecasting perspective because it tells the health of the economy and also forecasts what, to some extent, what to expect in the future. And Malaysia's purchase, well, the Malaysia's manufacturing numbers reflect the ongoing malaise as well as the ongoing downturn and contraction in China and America and Singapore. And that really reflects the effects of the trade war that is happening between the Americans and the Chinese. Low demand, stagnant employment rates, challenging operating conditions have been cited as factors behind this decline. And according to Joe Hayes, an economist at IHS Market, who compiles a survey, this December data is the strongest contraction in the Malaysian manufacturing sector since records began for the survey.
So I think this will really eat into economic policy for the foreseeable next 12 months. In fact, we have to also deal with like the fall in oil prices and how it would affect our budget. I think Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng has come up to say that they may have to revise the budget because there's quite a bit of revenue coming from oil and not to mention Petronas as well. So I think our assumption for the budget was about 70 ringgit thereabout, 70 US dollars per barrel thereabout, and now is hovering around the 50s level. But the other casualty, Chuang, is also the banking sector, where the average loan growth is around the 5% level. CIMB Research and Afin Huang is noting this slower loan growth.
Well, of course it would, because the financial sector and both the upper end of the value chain as well as the lower end of the value chain would feel the effects of any slowdown in manufacturing activity. So the fact that it's at 5% kind of like mirrors for on a one-to-one basis the GDP growth rate, whereas in the past, as recently as maybe 4 or 5 years ago, it was a multiple of about 2 or 3 times national GDP. And, you know, apropos what you're saying earlier, Jules, about how this would affect policy going forward, you know how the central bank, the Fed Reserve in America, always says that its policy on interest rates is really data dependent? But it would be the same by and large in Malaysia as well.
Definitely so. And as far as the sector is concerned, the banking sector is concerned, the slower loan growth would have to imply other things like poorer asset quality, higher non-performing loans, net interest margin compression. In fact, if you look at some of the numbers, loan applications have declined by 24% and loan approvals fell by about 6.7% year on year in November.
Yeah, so all this is banking industry doublespeak for what is essentially very layman circumstances. As supply chains in China and America are severed, this affects our ongoing supply chains in Malaysia. So in other words, that means fewer orders, more price negotiations, and less applications for more loans. This also means that because Fed policy has been to increase rates, other emerging markets, central banks have also had to increase interest rates to defend the currencies, and that drives up borrowing costs, which then lower demand for banking facilities.
But in spite of that, Chuang, Maybank has managed to squeeze out a 10% rise in earnings and salaries for the employees. This is a collective agreement, actually, from the union. So kudos to the unions for having extracted this deal out of Maybank on the back of a slower and a bleaker economic situation in Malaysia.
Yeah, so there's two ways of looking at this, right? You either try and pay, you know, basically sweeten the proposition to keep your employees, because then when the circumstances change and improve, you still get your star performers in the fold, or not. So this 10% increase has really been quite sweet, because inflation is what? 4%, 3%, 4%, 5%?
So lower, much lower.
Below, right?
I think it's between 1% and 2%.
1% and 2%, yeah. Officially. But that also equates to, or gives us fodder for understanding why Maybank's cost to income ratio is around about 47% versus, say, a public bank, which is
in the
mid to low 30s. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that has been reflected in share price as well, because Maybank share price has certainly trailed that of Public Bank, which remains one of the most favorite stocks among investors, having done just stellar over the past 10 years, including dividends as well, and remains one of the most expensive banks in the world at a 2.5 times price to book. But the situation with Maybank is interesting because they've had a change of guard after the elections. Tan Sri Wahid Omar stepped down as chairman, being replaced by ex-BNM governor Tan Sri Zetty. They also just announced the retirement of its deputy president and group COO, Dato' Idris Kechot. And this was announced just recently.
Yeah, so I think you're referring to PNB. PNB is, of course, the 48% owner of Maybank, and Maybank is a PNB company, and you're referring to the management changes within that fold. But going back to that collective agreement that you discussed with Maybank's employees, a lot of benefits, but for me, the one that struck out the most was the fact that the staff now get to pay only 2% on their mortgages, down from the 3.5%.
Fantastic,
right? So yeah, you can own a property if you're a Maybank employee for 2% mortgage a year.
But that means that you have a ball and chain. You can't leave Maybank, because the moment you leave, it jumps to 4.5%.
Depending on your
more than double, right?
But depending on your credit profile,
credit standing. Yeah. Now, just a continuation of the recession theme. There's a breaking news that Apple has lowered its outlook for the first quarter of revenue. Now it expects about $84 billion for the quarter, down from $93 billion it previously projected. Analysts are also expecting $91 billion. So even the fanboys and fangirls of the Apple iPhones out there, not enough to keep sales up.
So Tim Cook went on the record as saying that, and this is a quote-unquote verbatim from what the Apple CEO said. He said that while we anticipated some challenges in key emerging markets, we do not foresee the magnitude of the economic deceleration, particularly in Greater China. If you look at our results, our shortfall is over 100% from iPhone, and it's primarily in Greater China.
Right. I think this China issue will continue to play out because recently, apart from the trade tiff that US and China are having, there is also the recent arrest of the Huawei CFO, who is very connected to the higher-ups at the Communist Party. And I think the Communist Party members in China is not going to take this lying down. There will be some kind of a tit-for-tat. In fact, recently I read some articles that China would start arbitrarily arresting Americans in China.
Yeah, so that whole trade spat has taken on a more ominous paradigm. And the Huawei effect is actually also felt out in its products and its goods, basically. I mean, have you seen the latest smartphones from Huawei? Pretty darn good, and I think that's taking some of the shine off this whole iPhone phenomenon in China.
Absolutely. And Tron, just talking about tech, and not quite in the tech space, but more in an online business model, LoanStreet.com.my, which is a financial comparison website, has now launched an online insurance for motorcyclists to buy their insurance, and this is expected to be quite cheap. And I think the reason why this news is relevant, because I think online models like this and the so-called fintechs are expected to disrupt old models in the old insurance industry.
Well, the key disruption here will really be the agency workforce, right? Because if you can reach your client directly without having to go through an agent, then you can pass on some of these cost savings to the end user. And what better way to address the wider market than the transport of the masses, which is a two-wheeled humble motorcycle, right?
Absolutely.
The same vehicle that Syed Saddiq procured his bandage on his right cheek with.
Although one would suspect that Syed Saddiq had used a big bike, a Harley bike, rather than a Kapchai or something.
Ah, but let's not assume. He maybe have been on a C70. You never know.
Yeah, that's right. In connected to that, Chuang, and in connection to this whole recessionary theme that we might be facing, there is also news that Equinas has launched a $1 billion fund to be utilized to accelerate the growth of high potential business and local businesses.
Yeah, so this 1 billion ringgit fund might well be swollen to expand to 1.5 billion ringgit. And some of the core sectors within its purview include education, oil and gas, FMCG, retail, leisure, healthcare, services, and other sectors with potential. Not forgetting the fact that they actually procured a 2.3 billion ringgit realization from proceeds, dividends, and interest, which could well go towards starting up this new fund in these new areas.
Yeah, that's right. This will bring Equinas Fund's asset under management to about 4.1 billion ringgit. And obviously, the most immediate question that comes to mind, Chuang, you know, 1 billion is not a lot of money, and 1 billion is very opportunistic. Obviously, this is not going to be enough to hold up the economy.
I didn't realize you transmogrified from Julian Ng to Warren Buffett, Jones. 1 billion ringgit to all and sundry is a lot
nothing.
Of money.
1 billion is nothing.
It's nothing.
Look, our Malaysian economy is 1 trillion GDP, right?
It is, actually.
1 trillion GDP. So if the economy is slowing down from, let's say, 4.5% to 4% or to 3.5%, how much money does it need not to change the light bulb, but to prop up the economy, right? For a 1 trillion ringgit economy.
Well, yeah, you would have to assume that a lot of these funds, the Equinases of this world, the value caps, the PNBs of this world, would really be putting their ammunition to work in an economy which is, I guess, under pressure from the Chinese, the American trade spats and other global turmoils.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I think the government is now in a position to, they want to look for new sources of revenue after cancelling the GST. And one of the things that they were going to do is to actually tax the digital economy. I'm not sure, again, whether this is money well spent, because that's a growing industry, and whether you want to do things to discourage that. And then on the other hand, a lot of money is being spent on, for example, compensating toll roads.
Yeah, it's a constant balancing act between appeasing their biggest stakeholder, i.e. the voters, versus having an economy which is open, vibrant, and accepting of global investment. But you have to assume that, for example, Netflix, which has taken a real foothold within the Malaysian digital space, a lot of, I would say, subscriber migration from the Astros to the Netflixes of this world, they would be willing to pay digital taxes if the proposition from a market perspective is there.
Okay, it's coming up to 9 a.m. and the news will be following suit. But after that, we'll be talking about the happenings at FBM KLCI, being the second trading day of the year, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.